To sync this podcast to the episode, pause now and hit play right after the previously on.
Hello, everyone. It's Meryl Davis with Tony Graffia and Carrot. We're here with episode 411, If Not for Hope, written by Bronwyn Garrity and Shayna Fuel. And we're diving right in because it's one of those rare times where we don't do the main titles first. Should we talk about Roger looking like he's gone back to his own time? Last we saw him in 410, he was going up to the stones. We weren't sure if he was going to go back or not. What do you think his thought process was here?
Yeah, we purposely left on the cliffhanger of him trying to show his decision-making, whether he was going to go through the stones or not and leave Brianna. And this is a little bit of a trick here, a little cheat that where we see that, you know, we're meant to think for a moment that he did go back when we see him in the shower. I mean, the idea was for the audience to go, oh my God, he actually did it. He went back. And we use the shower because it's a frequent thing that we talk about, like what you'd miss in the past, like no hot showers. Yeah. And then we, you know, quickly show that it's just his imagination and that he was recaptured by the Mohawk.
I mean, personally, I think he would never have gone back. I think it was just a momentary, I've been caught by the Mohawk.
Yeah.
I'm running out of time. I'm miserable. But I don't think he would ever have done it.
I don't think he would have ever left Brianna, and certainly was just meant to show the temptation. But we did actually have a lot of discussion about how far we should go with it, whether he actually stops, turns around and goes, or whether he's caught at the last moment by the Mohawk. And one of the things, you know, we actually shot it when we, I know that when they shot it, they showed the Mohawk in the background and they showed, we actually filmed them grabbing him. So that we would have it if we wanted, but we didn't end up using it. We just went with the hesitation.
It's more
the
fun doing that way. Also, this is a morning podcast, an unusual morning podcast. Yeah. Normally we record these in the afternoon.
Yeah.
So we're drinking tea this morning instead of boozing it up because,
well,
we're not boozers. We're not going to start drinking at 10
Earl Grey tea.
There's anything wrong with that.
Not that there's anything wrong with boozing now. But yes, I'm enjoying Earl Grey. You're having...
Yes, I'm having chai tea, actually, this morning.
Oh, nice.
Yes. A lot of people ask if who does the Brianna drawings, and that's our lovely art department who comes up with all these lovely things. I actually don't know whether or not Sophie Skelton can draw. I know she can sing, but...
She's very talented,
But what was the thought process here? But, you know, we talked a lot about obviously wanting to see Brianna's artistic talent that she hopefully got from her grandmother. Because I don't think Claire we've ever shown her, although surgery, one could say, is an art.
Right. Well, we showed in an earlier season that Brianna was drawing, I believe it was in 305.
The structural details.
Yeah, she was, you know, gravitating away from history and into her true passion, which was engineering and architecture. And we showed her drawing the cloisters. I believe in the book she's painting, but we decided to go with more with drawing and charcoal drawing because that's really more what she'd be doing as an engineer, you know, fascinated with how things are put together. And here she's kind of using it as therapy. You know, she's in a holding pattern of waiting while her parents go to look for Roger, and she's drawing to get her emotions out, and she's drawing very dark and disturbing drawings. And I thought it was kind of funny how Lizzie sees it and is like, oh my God, you're possessed by demons. She's like, I'm not possessed.
Yeah. And let's just talk about Lizzie for a second, because I know a lot of people have asked about the casting of Lizzie, and Lizzie's one of my favorites. And obviously the Lizzie we cast is taller and a little older than the Lizzie from the books, but we just loved her spirit. And for us, as always in casting, and I know some people disagree, but we go for the best actress and the person who embodies the spirit. For us, we try to get the looks from the book, but at the end of the day, you want someone who embodies that character more than all the physical traits.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think Caitlin has done a tremendous job.
Yeah, she's really awesome. Yeah.
This was also a tricky sequence you know, the Jamie and Claire relationship, you know, there's a lot of questions about Jamie and Claire not being on the same team here. The purpose of this was not to show that they have drifted apart, but more we've talked a lot about what would happen if your daughter came back and someone you were loyal to, your daughter all of a sudden comes between the person you're most loyal to, your lover, your husband, Jamie. Mm-hmm. Certainly you would be torn. It's not that you left Jamie any less and he's still your soulmate, but this is your daughter. And do you keep her secrets? And do you have a duty to do that? And what if she asks you to not share something with your husband? What do you do? And that struggle, yeah, might show that a little bit.
Yeah, it's a great struggle for them because it's something that they've never had to deal with before. And, you know, they were always just a couple and now they're really a trio. And, you know, Claire actually has spent more time with Brianna than with Jamie because she was with Brianna for 20 years and she's responsible for her. You know, it's a different kind of relationship. And I think that if you betrayed your daughter's trust, you know, one of the things that comes up is that they wouldn't trust you anymore. Yeah. If they told you a secret, something, even if they asked you to keep it from their father, if you didn't do that, you'd probably lose their trust and they wouldn't confide in you. And that could lead to bad things. So I think you have to, you know, Claire has to walk that line, as would Jamie if Brianna asked him not to tell Claire something. So it's a tricky.
But also, I think we tried to show not that they were upset with each other here, but more that they were upset with themselves.
Yeah.
And upset with how they'd each handled it and kind of were in their own world and hadn't yet been able to communicate that to each other.
Yeah, that's what's different about this couple. Even when they have disagreements or fights, they're not a bickering, sniping kind of couple that's going to be like, I'm mad at you, you know, you kept that from me. They both go internal. They both think about themselves and what they could have done differently, and they tend to just, they're not able to connect on this trip because they're both just so upset with everything and so worried about Roger and worried about Brianna.
Not to jump in, but I think that's unusual for them. I think normally they do communicate so well, and mm-hmm, we show that as a couple that they, and I think that's one of the things that I know I and a lot of other people admire about this relationship, that they are able to discuss so much. And I think that's what we're trying to show here, that this, because of the introduction of Brianna, this is an unusual thing for them. That this is the first time I think they feel torn. There's loyalties torn, and they just need to get to the point where they talk to each other.
They have to learn to navigate things, new situations together, and there has to be conflict in their story. If they just handled everything swimmingly every time something came up, it wouldn't be very interesting to watch. So, you know, they are extraordinary people, but they're not perfect people. And seeing their struggles and their sometimes flaws is what makes them really interesting.
Poor Young Yoon. I just want to say it is so roasting in the room we're filming. I know no one cares out there, but...
That might be because they're drinking hot tea.
Yes, that could be as well. Meanwhile, we're catching up with Fergus, obviously, on the search for Stephen Bonnet with Murtaugh. One of our... How many wanted pictures do you think we've had over the seasons?
I know, we've drawn Claire a lot of
had,
them.
I feel like Claire had one. Jamie has definitely had one. Murtaugh. I want a wanted poster for myself.
At some point, you know, maybe Rollo will be lost and they'll be like, lost dog, and we'll have a drawing of Rollo, do you think?
I like your New Orleans accent when you pronounce Rollo.
Oh, it's, Rollo. I guess it's more Rollo, huh?
Yeah. Rollo. People don't know Tony's from New Orleans. Actually, not from New Orleans.
The swamps. The South. It comes out more when I'm drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
I probably have less of an accent today because I'm drinking proper British tea. Yeah.
You know, unfortunately, because there are so many people to service and stories to service in these episodes, you know, I think Marsley and Fergus a little more prominent in the books. But sometimes we have so many stories to tell. And obviously this season with the introduction more of Brandon and Roger, you know, taking more story, it's hard to get everyone in. So it's nice sometimes to be able to check in with some of our right. characters that we haven't seen. And as people know, we did end up, instead of taking these to the Ridge, leaving them in Wilmington just to try to give them a little more story. I don't know how I feel having Murta as a house guest.
A house guest, yeah. I think it's like when you have a relative staying with you and he gets to be a little too long. And Marsley's like, I'm done. I think I'm done with this. But, you know, I think it's kind of cool that they stayed in Wilmington because I love the Marsley character, and I like thinking about her and what she's thinking. And I think, you know, she, you know, grew up in this really just with her sister and her mom and on this farm. And I think part of what attracted her to Fergus, this sort of exotic, more French guy. Yes. And I think she wanted out of that sort of smaller life and wanted adventure. And the first thing that happens is they're on a boat to Jamaica, you know? So yeah. I think when she got to the New World, she thought, I want to see what it's like to live in a town and be a little more cosmopolitan maybe, you know, so I think she spends some time there, but then, you know, might later realize that she wants to be closer to family eventually. But she needed to spread her wings a little, and she's working in Wilmington, and I think it's cool. Here's another character we absolutely love, Phaedra.
Yeah. She's amazing. And it's nice to see, you know, something we explored and... you know, what we call Outland or Untold, which are these special scenes we did for Sony, is kind of the relationship between Phaedra and Lizzie. And, you know, because when we decided to bring Lizzie to Riverrun, we were like, oh, is that going to take away from Phaedra's story? I mean, those are the things I think you talk about in the writer's room a lot. It's, you know, even same with Murta. When we kept Murta alive, it was like, Murta is now taking story away from somebody else. And how do you deal with that and spread it around? But, you know, she's kind of jumps off the screen, and interesting to show her perspective and Lizzie's perspective and dealing with Brianna, who they're both very worried about. And
yeah.
And also the mores of the time. I mean, you know, obviously an unmarried woman who's pregnant was, you know, considered very shameful.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's interesting. Brianna's here. Obviously, she's from, you know, the future, and she's going to treat people differently because she, you know, she had Gail as a roommate and doesn't see things the way, you know, people in this century do. And she finds Phaedra beautiful and decided to draw her. And I think that's a lovely moment.
And here's a scene that I think we decided to add also because, unfortunately, since we weren't able to have Brianna at Lollybrock as we'd hoped, we did want to get out some information about Brianna's grandmother, Ellen. I mean, things that she would have found out at Lollybrock. You know, sadly, we missed that moment, but it was a nice way to hear from Ellen's sister, that she's similar to her.
Yeah. I love Jocasta. She's so just subtly manipulative. You know, she's such a Mackenzie.
I don't know if it's subtle.
She's not, you know, well, she's more subtle than, say, Dougal.
Yes, yes.
But she's, you know, she's a woman of her time. And I think... you know, she doesn't have a lot of love for Claire, who's so outspoken, and this is Claire's daughter, so it's almost like a chance for her to, you know, to influence Claire's daughter and be like, I'm going to mother her a bit, and she's going to do things my way, and then she finds that Brianna is just as spirited as Claire, and I mean, I think she's genuinely trying to help her, because even though she goes about it in a little bit of a twisted way, she's, you know, she's looking out for the girl, because in this time you just could not have a baby out of wedlock, or if you did, you know, that kid had no prospects, could never own property, could never, you know, there's just so many restrictions that it would limit the boy's life, or girl.
Yep.
The baby would not have the opportunities, and Brianna's life, would be.
But also, I mean, God, wouldn't you love to see our Dougal, Colm, and Jocasta together? Obviously, you never cast Ellen.
I would. We love Maria Doyle Kennedy so much.
By the way, can we talk about pregnancy acting here? Because it's always hard for the actors when they have to wear that belly down there, which and unfortunately is very hard in these clothes to stay in one place. Actually, it tends to move because the clothes are tight and it pushes it down. And I feel like I was constantly on set trying to shove the pregnancy belly up a little further. Like, it's so low. I love this. Not at all subtle. This was a fun scene, which we talked about a lot, because we were like, once again, Marsley's going to get annoyed that she has Murtaugh in her house. You know, he's creating a bit of a ruckus. She's also worried about her husband. And we talked about a scene we missed, sadly, at Lollybrock, was the one where Jenny asked Jamie to ask Ian to go with him to battle, even though he's missing a leg, because she wants a whole man or none at all. We really wanted to get that in and felt this was a great way to do it with another character.
Yeah, Marsley knows that Fergus is feeling bad. He's lost his job and having trouble finding work. And she knows it would mean a lot to him to be asked to join, you know, this group of men and she's kind of, doing a little manipulation here too. I think the women in our show, they have ways of getting what they want. But all for good intentions. And she very much cares about her husband and is looking for ways to boost his confidence and morale at a time that's very difficult for them.
But she's struggling. I mean, it would be very hard in this time when your worth sometimes was caught up in physical or manual labor. If you couldn't do that or you couldn't go fight, I mean, people would look down on you and think you less of a man, which is sad. I love that line, I'll have a whole man and none at all. And it works with Marsley just as it worked with Jenny. Oh, the dinner parties. This is also a moment we talked about in the book. There's a fun moment where Brianna comes downstairs and flaunts her pregnant belly. We went back and forth about this. The problem was, at this point, it wasn't showing quite as much, even though in the previous scene it looks like it. In most of the costumes at this point, the belly was not showing at this progression of her pregnancy and didn't have quite the visual punch we were hoping for. And also, I think we wanted the fun of John Gray finding out about it first.
If everybody knew right off the bat and it was obvious, we love playing the moment where it slips, which you'll see a little later in the episode. But yes, where John Gray finds out.
And everyone will recognize Billy Boyd playing Gerald Forbes from The Lord of the Rings.
They'll also recognize the shot of Brianna coming down the stairs. That's from the main titles. Yeah. I don't know why I always like to point out.
The main titles? It's fun.
Yeah, I think
it's kind of fun, I think, to see, like, in the beginning all these shots and figure out where they land.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people have asked who have seen the episode, I know most of you haven't, if those pearls on her wrist are the pearls Claire gave her that are Ellen's. They're not, sadly, but we, Tony and I at least, maintain that Brianna still has pearls with her. Even though we haven't seen them.
Yes.
We went back and forth in the writer's room about how outspoken Brianna would be. We do feel like she would be outspoken, but on the other hand, she's not stupid. She knows she's in another time and has to toe the line.
She dances right on the edge of, like, you know, she can rein herself in, but she says some pretty provocative things, which I love Jocasta's reaction to them. Yeah. And we love Wolf. We've always loved this character of Lieutenant Wolf, who's played by Lee Boardman. Yeah. He just does a great job. He has a great face, and he, you know, definitely has his eyes set on Brianna. It's like a competition. All the guys are, it's kind of like a contest of who's going to win her over. It's just so funny.
I need to look at these jewels now and be like, oh my God. That's like $10 million just sitting there.
Yeah, I think the funny thing is back then, diamonds weren't even considered like the best of all of them. It was like, oh, here's some jewels, a ruby, a this, a that, and a diamond. It was just one of the...
But still, how rich is Gerald Forbes?
Well, they're pretty rich. I think he's pretty rich.
We talked a lot about in the room whether or not... When it dawns on Brianna here that her aunt Jocasta is trying to set her up to marry people.
Right.
Oh, Lord John. I love his theme music.
I love the looks of the men when John Gray arrives because he's just so regal and...
Well, he's a lord.
He's a lord. And they're just like, oh, no.
Even Brianna doesn't look thrilled. She's like, yet another suitor. This was a relationship we were really looking forward to. I mean,
yeah,
you know, in the book, I just loved that they had a friendship that Lord John couldn't have with Claire.
Mm-hmm.
It's another webisode we should think about doing, Murtaugh as babysitter.
Three regulators and a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, Fergus is so cute. Of course, this is the
payoff,
the moment that Marcelly set up, and
yep. I just love Murtaugh. I love Murtaugh, white-haired Murtaugh. He's so
cute. I know
cute.
He's
very dashing.
Very dashing.
I think one of the most difficult things about putting together an episode is weaving together two storylines. And as writers, I'm sure I'm not a writer, but I'm sure that's the most complicated part. It's when you have two separate storylines that don't really cross. And that's sometimes where editing comes in as well. It's figuring out how these two tie in. And sometimes we do try to do similar themes or...
Well, you always want to a theme, a common theme in the two episodes, even if the plots are very different, so that they resonate and sort of echo through each other and give you the feeling of a cohesive episode.
Tony, you want to talk a little bit about the thought process behind this? Because apparently I think some of us were surprised to learn that the term psychology was... around in this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, even in the writer's room, we were like, hey, psychology? Is that something they talked about back then or even had that word? But research showed that it did, and that was very interesting. how Brianna's trying to sort of, she's just tap dancing her way through this dinner because she's got to get through it. She realizes she's the main attraction and just trying to maybe deflect from the whole suitor thing. So she turns the tables and kind of takes control. Like, it's a way of her not being, like, the object of, you know, just this woman who's, like, being trotted out for these men to fight over. She, I think they're all surprised when she, you know, takes charge here and steers the evening. It's very cute how they're all interested in, like, oh, I'll close my eyes and do this little game.
It is amazing in that day how it wouldn't have been unusual for this type of party to happen, for someone to be betrothed immediately after, for this, you know, kind of very similar to how arranged marriages are. That just happened. She is kind of like a prized piece of meat, and that's a problem, something that, you know, Jocasta sees no issue with doing. Is she's no. trying to get her married before she has a baby and before people find out. You know, and it's political, and it's socially political. Motivated and
business. It's business motivated too, because, you know, she's connected to Jocasta. She's family. They believe she's got some money behind her. So yeah. Marrying into this family could only, you know,
benefit
all involved. Except, you know. But that's not what's on Brianna's mind. She's just wanting Roger to come back, and she just has to bide her time and play along.
Jocasta's starting to sweat here.
I love this because he's all like, your father?
Tony, you're walking in the woods. Who is with you?
Oh, gosh.
You don't have to answer.
My trusty rifle.
Yeah, exactly. My trusty steed.
Hmm.
It was also very difficult to struggle with the question of how long Brianna was going to hold on to this anger towards Jamie. I mean, her anger is not because there was a misunderstanding. Really, yeah. It's more what he said to her.
Yeah, I'd like to actually clear a little bit of that up, because I know there's been some talk online about... you know, why is everybody so mad at Jamie? They should be mad at Lizzie. And Lizzie didn't make a mistake. Jamie made a mistake. But Brianna is actually more upset about the things Jamie said, which he, you know, slipped out in anger because he was in, a tough situation.
He's a man of his time.
He's man of his time, too. And, you know, there was a difference between how Frank might have viewed it and how Jamie might have viewed it. You know, sex before marriage and that sort of thing. And also a lot of people angry at Claire that she didn't tell, you know, if Claire would have just told her, you know, Jamie about Stephen Bonnet, then the misunderstanding wouldn't have happened. But if you watch the editing of it, it was happening concurrently. She found the ring and learned about Bonnet as Roger was riding up. So there was no time to go back and say, hold on, there's a different rapist. The speed at which it happened prevented that. And so that was how it was structured for the maximum drama that all these things unfold at
but
once.
But also Brianna had asked Claire not to tell Jamie.
Yeah.
Because I think she knew Jamie would try to retaliate and didn't want to put him in danger. So, I mean, Claire was in a very difficult spot.
Claire
as well.
Knows how dangerous Stephen Bonnet is. Claire doesn't want Jamie to be in danger. You know, she knows that he would have gone after Bonnet. And again, her daughter, you know, confided something important in her. And if she would have blown that confidence, Brianna may never talk to her again about anything that's important, that, you know, something that her mom could have helped with. So I think it's a great emotional dilemma in a family that this these things happen.
But also it's something Claire had to deal with in season one and still has to deal with. It's like a woman's place in this time is different than even, you know, even in the '60s, it was certainly different than it is now. And for your dad to think people would view you as a whore in this situation when it wasn't your fault is very difficult to hear.
Right.
Even though Jamie's not wrong that in this time, that's absolutely what would
happen. Yeah, he wasn't saying he thought that of her. He was saying people would think that.
I want Lord John to find a true love.
I know. I love him. I love that he's here for, he's here for Brianna. That he loves Jamie so much that he would take care of his daughter, because it's part of Jamie. You know, and it's something that he just does for him. And of course, Lord John has just learned that there's another complication here that you know, she is pregnant. You have been doing it all evening, Jocasta. She's hilarious.
These are a fun duo. I just want to apologize if anyone's hearing construction sounds. They're doing construction in our building today, and
yeah, there's a little bit of banging and hammering upstairs.
We're probably the only ones to hear it, but
Here's where, you know, Brianna's, these words are starting to get to her. It's starting to ring true, the realities of, I think the, you know, the wall she's trying to put up is not thinking about what happens if Roger doesn't come back.
Right.
She's holding out hope, which is, you know, the theme and the title of the episode. And this, what Jocasta is saying, although well-intentioned, is really eroding, you know, eating away at the hope that Brianna has, because she's like, look, I don't have to figure this out because Roger's coming back. Yeah. And now the longer it goes on, she's starting to go, well, God, maybe I have to actually think about what happens if he doesn't. Maybe this is all true and I'm going to have to face this at some point. So I think I like watching Sophie go through that arc of,
well, it's also more, I mean, it's really not about the money because obviously, you know, she won't be on the streets. Certainly Jocasta would help, but it's more, I think, the dawning realization that it's not about me anymore. It's not about me, Brianna. It's about my child and how my child will be viewed in this society if we're staying here. And that's the difficulty.
Well, you know, it's, here again, we're hitting the theme of the episode. You know, Jocasta's like, you cannot live on hope. And for Jocasta, that's been true in her lifetime. She's been married 4 times. She went through a war and had to leave Scotland and come here. And even though she's done well and has this, you know, plantation, she's a very, I see her as a very lonely woman and tragic figure. And, you know, when Jamie shows up, she's so thrilled and believes she can give him, you know, make him her heir and that they're all going to live there and be family again. And that didn't work out. And now the daughter's here. And I think she's kind of needy and really wanting a family connection. And she doesn't put much stock in hope.
Well, she's very pragmatic. I mean, she's
very pragmatic and she's a Mackenzie. You know, she's not a dreamer. That was, you know, that was Ellen, that was Brian Fraser. That wasn't the other side of the family.
Murtaugh taking care of business.
Yeah, a lot of people I know also were, had remarked, you know, is Jamie being, not very authentic to tell Brianna that she should forgive Bonnet and at the same time task Murtaugh with find him, bring him to me, I'm going to kill him. Because obviously Jamie's not forgiving him. But, you know, that's his protectiveness as a father. And, you know, he knows that Brianna needed to forgive Bonnet in order to move on. But
because of like his
he's not required to.
No, exactly.
Dads are not required to forgive the rapists of their daughters. So, or the killer of their friends. Because Jamie had a history with Bonnet before he ever crossed paths with Brianna. So,
but it's also had his own assault on him. So he knows what that's like. You know what's the most comfortable thing in the world? Watching a sex scene while doing a podcast.
I'm going to cover my eyes. I'm just covering my eyes. It's too early in the morning.
Really nothing to talk about here. Obviously, this is a scene from the book that we felt was important and sets up a later thing in this show, but obviously it was important for Brianna to know,
Yeah, this is, I mean, it would be quite scandalous in that time to obviously be outed and caught doing something like that. For Brianna, who's from the 60s, not quite as scandalous.
I always thought, it is from the book, obviously, but I always thought that was pretty ballsy. I mean, not to, for Lord John to do that, I think I was always surprised in the book that
in the book he goes outside and I think it's like they're hiding in the barn or something, and we actually had to shoot it. We shot it in the house, so that Brianna, you know, she wouldn't be wandering around out there pregnant to see it in the middle of the night. But
in that time and the risk of getting caught, and it was very...
It's very risky. And it's sad. It's sad to me that, you know, Lord John, his heart belongs to Jamie, but...
But it's
he can't have Jamie.
No,
so
but it's also very hard to live a life that you have to hide constantly.
Absolutely. So we're tightening the screws here on Brianna because now, like, one of the men is actually going to propose. It's going to be very hard for her to say no. So she has to come up with another plan. Here we'll get to see a little bit of the Mackenzie in her.
Whatever could her plan be? We went back and forth in the writer's room about this upcoming scene because, some people worried that, would Brianna do this? Would it matter to Lord John? Would he feel would he be afraid of her? Would he, you know, how do we make the turn in this scene where it goes from, I'm about to blackmail you to...
Right. Yeah, it's a really complicated.
And also a lot of people questioned, I do think there's underneath it all, I do think obviously Lord John was a quote unquote dutiful husband to Isabel. I do think there's something about Brianna that is attractive to Lord John because there's a part of Jamie in there.
Yeah.
So I do think when he threatens her, he's not lying.
No, I mean, you got to understand, Brianna's very desperate here. Yeah. And I don't think it's something she would normally do, but it just shows the lengths that you might... fall to in trying to protect your child, because that's what she's trying to do here. You know, it was a very maybe bad decision on her part to go down this road with him. But she's, again, people sometimes do, you know, in desperate situations, do desperate things, and something, she very quickly goes back on it and says, oh God, I'm an idiot, I'm so sorry.
But that's the key to Brianna. I mean, for me, Brianna is a very tricky character. In the books, I struggled to like her sometimes, and I think we have tried to endeavored to make Brianna a little more likable. Yeah. But I mean, this scene is a perfect example. It's like, you're completely on Lord John's side. You're not, when he's like, what makes you think Jamie doesn't already know? You're like, that's right.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, Sophie brings such a gentle kind of likability to Brianna. That really helps, because it would be easy to not like Brianna here and to feel like she's manipulating Lord John, and obviously she's in the wrong. But as you said, desperate times call for desperate measures. I've got like matching ponytails I've never noticed before.
I think this is a tricky scene for... yeah, they do have matching ponytails. You know, because when Lord John says, I'll teach you to play with fire, I mean, he bites back a little.
Yes,
I mean, I think there is a part of him that's like, oh, you know, this could be bad. I can't have this get out. It is a real threat. At the same time, he snaps back at her and shows his teeth. And I think it's like, he's got some strength there. He's not going to let this girl manipulate him. But he has enough compassion to see what's behind it. And he loves Jamie, so therefore he may have even been, a part of him might have even been impressed, like, wow, you've got your father's strength and fire in you that you could even, you know, do this. And he knows that Jamie sent him there to protect Jamie's child. So what Brown is trying to do is protect her child. So he...
But also this, I think this scene is a turning point in their relationship. I think this really is the start of a lovely friendship between the two. They've both kind of bared their souls. They've both very vulnerable. I think another theme in the Outlander books in general is people raising kids that are not their own.
Yeah.
And something we talk about all the time, and you see time and time again. And here is, you know, Brianna questioning whether Roger could love a child that's not his own to a man who has raised a child that's not his own, and loves him just as much as if he were his own.
Well, Brianna, you know, confides in him now, because he's one of the few people she can really talk to. He is not judging her, and he doesn't have an agenda here. And in some ways, now that she knows that he, you know, isn't even into women, it gives her a freedom of like, okay, you're not one of these guys who's just after me for my looks or my money or Jocasta's estate, you know. And that's why she can open up to him, because she knows now that there's not another agenda. And
but also he's very kind. I mean, I think one of the things about his character, Lord John, that we all love so much is he's from a very upper crust family. He's very aristocratic, but yet he's not judgmental. And possibly because he also has his own secret out there. But I think he is someone that people want to confide in.
Well, that's why Jamie, you know, was drawn to him as a friend, because he can sense that this is an honorable man, you know, with a sense of loyalty. And he acts with his heart, you know.
You know, we've never explored, or we didn't have a chance to explore I almost wish you could, well, we won't, I was about to spoil something.
I was going to say, be very careful there,
Miss
Davis.
Sorry, people, I was about to spoil something. I forget people haven't seen the rest of the episode. Never mind. These are so hard sometimes, these podcasts, to do, because obviously we've seen them all and we know what's happening. And or you've written some, as the case may be.
Yes.
That was close.
Jocasta thinks she's hit the mother load here. She's like, oh, you snagged a lord. Way to go, Mackenzie.
I know.
You know, I know some people have said, you know, Jamie and Claire weren't as present, or we did an episode that didn't have them. And we absolutely love Jamie and Claire, and they're the heart and soul of the show. And we do a lot with them. But this book, you know, this book does have a lot of Roger and Brianna in it. There's many, many chapters that don't have Jamie and Claire, where we explore their stories. And I just believe, to me, it is about, all of it's about Jamie and Claire. It's their world. It's their children. It's, you know, they made Brianna. Their heart and soul is in their child. Their stories are all, to me, it is all a Jamie and Claire story.
Yeah, everything. They are the center of the wheel that everything kind of comes
exactly.
off of. But
I mean, even this Brianna Lord John's story, it's about Jamie. Yeah. If you know, because it's Lord John's love for Jamie that brings him to Brianna, and it's he's there in their relationship. So they're a part of everything and in everything, and everything is ultimately about them.
Yeah.
And it's only a tribute to the richness of their relationship that all these stories can emanate from the center of this central couple.
Yeah. And everything should always come back to them. And you know, obviously this is a moment where they haven't been able to come back together, but you know, yeah, as you said, the story is about Jamie and Claire. It's their story, but we do have to see how Roger and Brianna's relationship unfolds as well. In this day and age, you could drink while pregnant.
This is a beautiful shot in a beautiful location. And we have Gary Steele, obviously, built the facade of River Run in a gorgeous spot in Scotland. And then, you know, the interiors are obviously shot on our stages. But it just looks amazing. I mean, that was such a beautiful shot there of them on the porch. I like how Brianna is finding out, you know, more about Lord John, and surprised to learn that he has a child that is actually her half brother.
I know. That's what's so poignant about this scene. I mean, obviously, talking about, you know, he knows who the real father is. You know, his love of Jamie keeps coming out.
Yeah, I think I love that sentiment, because it's not like he's doing Jamie a favor. I'll raise your son for you. It's not just for Jamie. Yeah. It's for John, because John gets something out of it as well. To me, it harkens back to that line that Claire says when she says, it's not true, you have nothing of Jamie, you have Willie. Yeah. And so, he, you know.
Well, maybe, I guess it started because of Jamie, but you're right. It has evolved to the point where he truly
loves,
isn't about Jamie anymore.
Yeah.
He truly loves Willie as his own son.
Yeah, Jamie has actually given him something. in John doing something for Jamie, John has gained a love of his life, which is this kid that he truly loves. So yeah, I like how Jamie is obviously thinking of his child and the pain that's been caused to Brianna, and he buries this guy because
also the moment where it dawns on Claire that she's been so wrapped up in her own guilt about this whole situation, mm-hmm. doesn't realize that they've both, in not communicating about this, been angry at themselves and not come together. And
And how young Ian's a bit of a peacemaker because he's just such a lovely, buoyant personality, and he loves both of them, and he sees them both suffering and tries to sort of be a mediator who brings them together by showing them that each other's suffering and that they're not mad at each other. They're just both in their own worlds.
That's the thing. There's so much anger here for both of them, for each other, and anger at the circumstances of what happened, that this happened to their child, and how was it their fault, and wrestling with these issues. But it is true, as we talked about before, now, you know, this idea, you know, there can be things we don't tell each other, but no lies. And I think they've tried to adhere to that, this whole relationship. And now with Brianna coming in, it's, as you said before, walking a fine line between what mm-hmm. that means and their loyalties. And it's just exploring a mature love of, as this relationship grows, how do we incorporate this other person?
Yeah. Yeah, here, I mean, Claire's explaining it that, you know, I like that she's being honest and saying, I don't know if I can keep this promise because I made that promise. Circumstances were different. And that's the cost. And Jamie understands. And I think he's a good man to say, I get it, because would he rather not have that daughter? That's, you know, part of the cost of letting new people into your life is that it's not going to always be the way that it was. Yeah. And you can't expect that. And you have to shift your expectations to accommodate new lives and loves that come into your world. Yeah. And that's how Claire and Jamie evolve as a couple.
Right. But to be clear, that's not, you know, our intention is not to ever show Jamie and Claire don't have just as wild as passionate as soulmate love as they have before.
Oh, not at all. No.
It's just, with a child in the mix, it's, if she asks one of you to keep a secret, it's, you know, it changes things.
But that's how you keep the passion between you, is by navigating these tricky waters and sorting it out, and not just sweeping it aside or repressing it or handling it in some black and white fashion.
Right.
Every hurdle that you overcome brings you closer. And that's the ultimate honesty between them. Yeah. That fuels the passion.
Also, it's so hard for Jamie. It's like, you know, certainly he's had surrogate kids, Fergus, Marcelly, young Ian, but, you know, Willie, but this is a child he can acknowledge, and this is his, and to have felt like he's hurt her is, you know, when she's just gotten back here, is tearing his guts out.
Yeah. Sam's wonderful in this scene, and you can just feel his pain. And he made her a promise, you know, that he would go after Roger, and, you know, he won't stop till he can keep that promise.
I don't know where young Ian's sleeping, but thank God he's not sleeping here. and roll over off somewhere else.
I think he's like, I'm just going to make my campfire down the road a bit because you guys are... Well, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, they do, you know, when they make love, there's many different ways and moods and, you know, and then this is more like comfort sex where they, if they're coming together after having been disconnected and they're, it's a little bit of a healing, and sharing their, with each other, what they're going through.
Finally, we get to see the Mohawk Village, which just huge shout out to our art department. They did such a tremendous job here.
This place looks absolutely authentic. If you stumbled upon it in the woods, in Fascali Woods, you would be like, okay, this is a Mohawk Village. It's very, very...
But they spend a lot of time and a lot of research researching these longhouses and the authenticity and just, you know, I know when people were actually there filming, it so helps your performance to know that you're in a place that looks as realistic to right. the time as possible.
And this is the famous gauntlet scene. They're putting Roger through sort of a trial of, is he strong enough? Can he stand up to this?
Well, there were some, some tribes that talked about whether or not you could make it through to the end and what that meant and if, which we'll find out next episode. I keep wanting to do spoilers. Sorry, people. I know you probably want me to do spoilers.
It ends on another bit of a cliffhanger with Roger there. So you'll have to
What's
come back
happen to him?
And figure out what is going to happen. It doesn't look too promising for him.
But thank you, everyone, again. And thank you for having me for another podcast.
Yeah, only two more. I'm getting kind of sad already.
I know. Droughtlander's almost here again. Anyway, thank you all. See you next time.
All right. See you next week.